Om Padram Karne Vishnu Yama Devaha Padram Pashe Makshapir Yajatraha Stirai Rangai Istushtu Vagum Sastanubihi Yashema Deva Hitanyatayuhu Swastina Indro Vridashravaha Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha Swastina Starsho Arishtanemihi Swastino Brahaspatir Tathatu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So we're on chapter 2, verse 34. Devi Vaitatya Prakarana, verse 34. Natma Pavena Nanedam, Natma Pavena Nanedam, Nesway Napi Katanchana, Nesway Napi Katanchana, Nepritang Napritang Kinchit, Nepritang Napritang Kinchit, Iti Tetwa Vido Viduhu, Tetwa Vido Viduhu, Na Atma Bhavena, Nana Idam, Na Swena Api Katanchana, Na Pratak, Na Apratak, Kinchit Iti, Tetwa Vidha Vidhu. Bhavena Nana Idam, Na Swena Api Katanchana. Napatang napatak kinchit. I said that right. I said that wrong. Let's chant it again. Repeat after me. Natma bhavena nanedam. Natma bhavena nanedam. Naswe napi katanchana. Naswe napi katanchana. Napatang napatak kinchit. Napatang napatak kinchit. Iti tatva vidho viduhu. Iti tattva vidho viduhu. Na atma bhavena nana idam na swena api katanchana na pratak na apratak kinchit iti tattva vidha viduhu. Okay, that got me out of it. I just had a thought about this. Well, let me just translate it and then we'll get into it. This jagat, so it says, na atma bhavena nana idam. Idam means this jagat, this universe. Na nana is not two. From the standpoint of the self, nana means diverse, means many, nana means many and varied, diverse. But really all it's saying, this atma is not a second thing, right? So this universe is not nana, is not diverse, is not a second thing. From what? It means it has no, it's not a thing, it's not a separate second thing, it's not diverse, it's not multifarious. It has no parts. It's simply not dual. Okay? This universe is not dual. From what standpoint? Atma bhavena. From its essential nature. From its essential nature, what is actually here in this universe, there aren't two. It's not nana. There's not tool. It is not dual. This whole universe that we see here, from the standpoint of the atma bhava, atma being, from the standpoint of its the truth, its essential nature, so from the standpoint of its being, that its own being, the being of its very self, there is no diversity. It is not dual. So, na 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 idam, this is not dual, atma bhava, from its own standpoint, from the standpoint of its own being. Then it says, nisvena api katanchana, nor in any way, nor on the other hand, in any way whatsoever, is it dual even from its own standpoint? So this is like saying, if I were to have, Shankara uses actually the rope snake example. From the, say if I have a projection of a snake on a rope. From the standpoint of this taking a snake, from the standpoint of the Atma Bhava, its essential nature, what is actually there, what is its being, the being of this snake, is only the rope, right? There is no really snake there. The truth of it is the rope. But then you should say, yeah, but from the standpoint of the snake, right, then is there nana? So if we say, from the standpoint of this universe, of course there's duality. But from the standpoint of it, of its essential nature, it's non-dual. He says, no. From the standpoint of the jagat, the universe, there's also no duality. Because how can something which is kalpita, how can something which is mithya, which is an imagination, so to speak, be considered as dual when there's nothing there? You can't take something that has no essential being from its own standpoint and say that it's dual or that it's diverse or that it's nana if that thing that you're talking about is mithya. So actually, this is let me go on a little bit. We'll finish it and then I'll talk a little bit about it. Did everybody see so far? It's kind of like if we look at the rope, Shankara uses the rope snake. If we look at the rope, and we say, with the rope snake, we see the snake, and we say, well, upon analysis, nirupyamanam, it means upon analyzing it, we see what is really there. Well, what is really there is only the rope. Right? There really is no snake. We don't say there is rope plus snake, because the snake is mithya. The snake is kalpita. It has no being of itself, so its being is really the rope. We say the same thing that this universe, really, from the standpoint of its being, what is actually here is the Atma, just the self. There's not the self and the universe. You say, yeah, you can say that, but then when we look at the universe from within the universe, right, from its own standpoint, there's a whole manifestation of duality. And then the question is, well, he says, no, there's no duality whatsoever, even from its own standpoint. Why? Because would you say, like, if you're looking at the snake, Just looking at the snake and seeing all of the various colors of the snake, the shape of the snake, the fangs of the snake. You know, you see the fangs of the snake and you see the rattler at the end of the tail. So the snake has so many parts, so many colors and all this. It's nana. Right? That's what we mean by nana. Okay. So now, do we say that the snake is nana? Is that it's diverse, it has all of these attributes? And we can say it, but the thing that we're talking about is mithya. So now we're getting into an analysis of, well, what does it really mean for something to be mithya? You know, now he takes it one more step. He goes, na pratak, na apratak kinchit. Okay. He says, this universe that we experience is na pratak. It itself is not separate from the self, na pratak. It's like I say, the snake, it's not separate from the rope. If you were to move the rope away, there would be no snake, right? So I say this universe is not separate from the self, so that you would say the self is here and the universe is over here. So we have two things. But no, it's not separate. It's not pratak. Nothing here, in fact, is separate. But then we say na pratak, and then na apratak. And it's not separate. It's not separate, but it's also not separate. Because if you say it's not separate, then you're saying that there's something here to be not separate. So then do you mean that this universe is like a guna, the attribute, a quality of the self? This whole manifest creation is really part of the self. It's not separate from the self, you know? It's the attribute of the self. So we say, well, no, we can't say that either. Because if it were an attribute of the self, then the self itself would be dual. So you would have a self that has all of these qualifications of the creation. You can imagine the self becoming the creation, becoming the self manifesting, the creation manifesting from the self modifying to become the creation, and now the self is the creation. And then the creation goes into unmanifestation, and so the self now is changing, coming back into its unmanifest condition, as though the self is itself going through some sort of a modification. You say, no, the self isn't going through any type of modification at all to become this creation. Well, then as this creation, it doesn't do anything, nothing happens to the self in light of this creation. But the self, of course, is not away from this creation. It has no being, it has no separate being apart from this creation. But this creation has no separate being apart from me. But then I, of course, am... but then, of course, it is not... It's not separate from me. It can't be separate from me. But then it can't be... It can't be separate from me, but it can't be the same as me either. It can't be one with me either. And so what we say, this one word that Swamiji has started to use for this mithya, this is exactly the nature of mithya, it can't be categorized. That's why the definition of mithya is sad asad bhyam, anirvachaniya. Anirvachaniya means it can't be defined, it can't be categorized as something which actually exists, right? Because if it did exist, then it could be separate. Right? If it existed also, but if you say it's something that anirvachaniya, you can't categorize it as something which exists, nor can you categorize it as something which is asat, non-existent. So what are you going to say about it then? It doesn't exist, it doesn't non-exist. And that's the order of reality we're giving to the entire universe, of everything that exists within duality. And that means everything that exists within duality. Another way of understanding duality in terms of how we experience it, duality requires the seer seeing seen, subject and object. Right? Once I say subject and object, we have duality. Once I say seer seeing, seer stands for any sense organ, know or known, know or knowing known, You know, and this is the duality that we are contained in, right? Without the subject-object relationship, there is no duality. From my perspective, if I'm not a seer, if I'm not an experiencer, I'm an experiencer, then there's the experiencer and the experienced. And so that is our world. Our world is made up of the experience, in my thinking, of the experiencer and the experienced. And when I'm looking at my world in this way, then the experiencer and the experienced are, in a sense, in terms of the virat, in terms of this physical world, they're the same order of reality. Like I, this person here, am experiencing, you know, this table, this room, the subject-object relationship. That is nana. When we say nana, it means diverse. It means two. Whenever we say diverse, all you have to say is two. Once you have two, there's subject-object, duality, time, space, everything comes into that. The instant there is two. And so if you say that this universe here, from the standpoint of itself, its being, is not two. Okay? From its own standpoint, it is only one. There we have to understand. Say if we instead of using rope snake, you use like the clay relief sculpture, where you got a big block of clay, and you carve into that clay, you know, a very intricate life scene of a city or whatever. So we would say, this scene, this jagat, this world, Atmabhava, Atmabhavena, from its own being, from its own standpoint of its essence, of itself, of what is actually there, there is no duality. There are not two, right? But then it says, but also, from the standpoint of the carving also, the city, you can't really say that there's two either, because from the standpoint of the city that you've carved into the clay, that city has, there is nothing still there but clay. Whether you look at it from its own being, or you try to distinguish one mithya person from another mithya person from a mithya apartment building. All of it is only clay. It has no reality at all. It has no substance. So you can't make two, no matter how you look at it. So here, if we look here, it's interesting. We say that this whole world that you're experiencing, if you understand it as mithya, you can't really divide it into parts because none of it is really here. That's what it amounts to. And then he goes to the next. And you can't say any of this is pratak, is separate. There is no separateness, nor is there any non-separateness. Because for something that is mithya, or something that is kalpita, or is projected, you can't speak of it as a real thing. And so here, just to make this clear, Shankara kind of makes this nice. I'll just read this a little bit to you, just so you get a little taste of it. He says, Nahi etra advaye paramartha satya atmani. Here, in the Advaya, in the non-dual Atma, the Paramartha Atma, when we say Paramarthika, Paramarthika Satyam, the Atma which actually is, which actually exists. The definition of Paramarthika, Paramarthika Satyam, is that which is never negated, can never be negated. It means the existence that it is has no beginning, it has no end, it has no time. That's Paramarthika Satyam. There is no such thing in this world. There's no paramarthika satyam. Because everything is subject to time. Anything that exists within duality is subject to change. That's immediately not paramarthika satyam. Anything that's subject to change is not paramarthika satyam. Paramartika Satyam means being itself, being itself that can't come into being or go out of being. So that being which cannot be negated in past, present, and future, that is Paramartika Satyam. So here what Shankara says is, you know, the pranadi samsara jatam, everything that exists within this collection of, and within the entire samsara, beginning with prana. If you remember, we've gone through previously all of the different prana, the deha, etc., the manas, etc., all of these as being parts of this creation and ending up as mitya. He says, this whole universe, when it's being analyzed, what happens is that from what it's being analyzed in terms of its true nature, what is actually here, what is the satyam, what is really here, he says, then, vastu antarabhutam bhavati, this nanatvam, this duality, which would mean that there's another vastu, another thing here, this duality upon analysis resolves. This duality resolves into the Paramartika Satyam, he says. Then he says, he gives an example. Just like the Raju Swarupena, Prakashena, Nirupyamanaha, Na Nana Bhutaha, Kalpitaha, Sarpaha, Asti, Padva. He goes like this. He says, just like a sarpa, just like a snake, which is kalpita, a snake which is imagined, right, is nana bhutaha, that snake which is being imagined as diverse. He says, when it is being analyzed upon analysis, nirupyamanaha, then what happens? Then with light, one sees its own swarupa. It sees its own nature as being simply the snake, Rajiswarupa. Prakashena, when light comes in, when knowledge comes in, then this diverse sarupa is seen clearly to be only the Raju, like that, to be only the rope. Then he says, Napi swena pranaratmana idam vidyate. He says, and this also, from its own standpoint, the prana, etc., is the atma. All of these things also, right, don't exist. He says, and he gives an example. Kadachit api raju sarpavat kalpitatvat. He said, all these things don't exist either. He says, kadachapi, he says, whenever. He says, because of being imagined like the snake on the rope. So if something is imagined like the snake on the rope, you can't give any existence to that either in order to consider it as dual. Right? You can't consider a non-existent thing as dual. So having said this, what he's doing, so what he says at the end, and what Shankara says at the end, is once this mityatva is understood, the mityatva of the creation is understood, then the non-dual nature of yourself is considered to be Shiva, considered to be auspicious. Because in the previous verse, after saying, are you guys following me? I'll just try, okay. these things are really terse, so I have to kind of pull it together. So in the previous verse, he says, if you remember, he says, this Atma, the self, is taken to be both all of these things that we experience, all this nana, all these objects that we experience, it's kalpita. The self, your Atma, yourself, is taken to be all of this. Like this is, this body is, this is known, I am the knower, the satchit is totally superimposed on all of these objects. Okay? Fine. And then he says, so the Atma is taken to be one with all of this, just like if I say, I am this body. Right? So it's taken to be, yourself is taken to be this. Self is also taken to be the non-dual Atma. if I'm an Ajnani, I take, this manas, the mind, takes the self to be this body, mind, sense organs, and also the set of the universe is projected onto the world. If I have knowledge, then this antakarana, right, this mind takes this non-dual atma, the non-dual atma, the self that I am, to be non-dual. I know, right? But it's the mind that is either ignorant or has knowledge. And so the mind is the one that says, you know, I am all of this, I am this body, mind, sense organs. The mind is the one that says, I'm the non-dual atma. Okay? Then he says, the next line he says, and also, all of these things, from their own standpoint, are taken to be the atma. They're one with the atma. They're taken to be the atma in this form. This is. So all of the objects that we experience in the world, from their own standpoint, we give being to them. To this body, we give being to this body. So this body is, right? My sense organs, they are, they exist. The prana is, it exists. This jagat, it is, it exists. That means I'm giving the satchit to the entire world. I give the sat to the entire world and to the body. I give the chit of the satchit, of the conscious being, to all of the jivas. To all of the antakaran and the sense organs, they all get the sukshma shariras, they all get the satchit. Whole world gets the sat. Because the whole world is, it is, it is, it is, it is. So there's what we call a total anyonya adyasa. There's only one from the standpoint of all the bhavas, all the bhavas are all the things that have come into being. From the standpoint of all of these things, the one thing they all have, all of them, they all have sat. They all have being. We can say they all have sat chit in this sense. They all have being and they all are known. Just in your experience, they all have being, they all are known. We can give the chit in terms of knowership to the jivas, to the sukshma shariras, to the subtle bodies, to the mind, to the sense organs. So there's two things happening here. From the standpoint of the atma, from the standpoint of myself, the atma, the self that I am, I take myself to be the body, mind, sense organs. Right? I take all of these things onto myself. And if I have knowledge, I recognize myself as non-dual, just non-dual. Or from the standpoint of the objects, all of these also become myself. So he says, therefore, this advaita, this what is actually here, this state of non-duality of what is actually here, is Shiva. Because in spite of whether I take it to be all of these objects, or all of my experiences, or I take it from my own standpoint, the one thing that is continually here is the advaita atma. No matter what standpoint you are looking at the universe from, the sat-chit is always here. It's never, it is never something, it can never be negated. That's the idea. And it's true. We don't think of that as true because we have ajnanam, we have ignorance. But once that viveka is there, what you realize is that no matter the anyonya adyasa, that superimposition, what is being superimposed on both ends, whether the bhavas, all of these existing objects, we're looking at them from their own standpoint, all of them are. Across the board, they all have being. If I look at myself, I am. And I can take myself to be all of these things, but I am. My being is. The being itself can never be negated. Everything else is negated because it's all coming and going and coming and going. But in the totality of my experience, whether I take myself from the standpoint of the subject or from the standpoint of the object, there is no negation of being. It's the one thing you can never get rid of. And so then in this next verse, there's a doubt. Well, how can you say, really, how can you say that all of this is only the self? Because even if you say all of this is mithya, there's still something here that's mithya. Right? That's two. You say this is mithya, and you say it's mithya, but it's here, mithya. Mithya is here. Right? And this mithya creation, you know that's here, no matter what you say, within the Mithya creation, there's diversity. This table is different from this chair, is different from this body. So no matter what you call it, it's still here. So he says, well, actually, no. It's not something that you can categorize as being sat or asat. And it's not something that you can, this mithya, you can't say it's here or it's not here. You can't, it defies that type of categorization, because nirupyamanam means upon analyzing this, you can't find anything here. Everything here that you say is something, and this is different from this, and this is different from that. Upon analysis, you just find names within names within names within names. It's all namni namani from the Chandogya Upanishad. Everything just falls apart into terms of names, because you can't actually find any kind of a substance here. And if you can't find a substance here, then what is the second thing that you're talking about? And so what you're actually finding here upon analysis in terms of the essence, you know, in terms of what is actually here, you can't find anything that is dual. Because everything that is dual just becomes a name. And in the end, what is it a name of? In the end, you know, what it's going to be a name of in the end is really only Brahman. It's really only the being that is here. Because everything else is just a name for what is essentially only Brahman. All of this. Because otherwise you have names within names within names infinitely. But what remains as the constant is only Brahman. Is only conscious being. And conscious being itself can't be objectified to be a thing. And so you go on endlessly dividing names within names within names within names, and in the end you have to say, well, who are you really naming? You're really naming what is actually here. And so this is table Brahman. You know, this is table Brahman, this is chair Brahman, this is book Brahman. There's nothing, they're just namas for being. Otherwise you have to say you're really naming something that doesn't have any being at all. If you're naming something that doesn't have any being, then is the thing that you're naming really here to be questioned, to be in a question? They said, no. He said, so, you say, so this universe, if you go into what is actually here, there's not two things, there's only one Brahman. And then if you start saying, well, in this Vyavahara, you know, from its own standpoint, there are many things. So that makes it two. You're just saying that this Vyavahara is Mithya. And so from the standpoint of the Vyavahara, this creation, in reference to the self, there's only one in terms of its being. But from the standpoint of Vyavahara, there's many different things. You say, no, there's not many different things. There's not many different things because you can't say that the snake that is not there has many parts. Yeah. The snake is not there to talk about it having many parts. So that's exactly what he says. And then he says, so in the end, what is it? We can't say that all of this, jagat, is separate, that it's separate from the self, and or from any part of it. And you can't say within itself, you can't say it's separate, because from its within itself, it's mithya, it's not really there. And in reference to the self, you can't say it's separate because all that is there is really Brahman. And you can't say it's not separate either. It's not separate. It's not separate. These categories, these categories don't apply. They don't apply when we're talking about something that is mithya. So you have to think rope snake. You can't say that something which is just an imagination that has no being is there from the standpoint of the adhishtana, of what is actually there, and it's not there in reference to the duality, it's not there in reference to itself either, because it isn't there. Right? So, it's interesting. So then he says, he goes, this is what the tattvavids know. Tattvaviddha, those who know the truth. Tattva means truth. Those knowers of the truth, those who know the truth, they know this. he goes, Iti tetu vidha vidhu. Thus, this is what the knowers of the truth know. What do they know? They know that there's no duality whatsoever, doesn't exist. That's mithya. And there's the play on words also. The duality which we experience doesn't exist. So if you say, that's why if you remember the definition of maya, ya ma iti maya, what that means is, that which is, you have to remember this, that which is not, that is maya. Okay. So I have to say, this, which we're experiencing, this here, which we are experiencing, is not. Now, if you say that, there's something that doesn't work there, right? That is the nature, because you can't categorize a statement like that. This which is here is not. It is, the being is here, the Satchit is here, but upon analysis, this which we're experiencing is not. And so that's why we have this order of reality called mithya. Satyam, the satyam, paramarthika satyam, means that which is. That which is. That which can never be negated in past, present, or future. The satyam is Brahman. What is satyam is Brahman, the Satchitananda Brahman. That is what is actually here. Tucham means that which is absolutely not here. Like the horn of a rabbit, or the son of a barren woman, or the city in the sky. Cloud, you know, the cloud city in the sky. These are just stock examples they use. It means it's not here. I cannot experience a son of a barren woman. It means that woman has had no son. That woman has, you have to go back in time now for these things to work. The woman has no son, so that that she has had no son, so that son that is not there. Right? Rabbits don't have horns. So there is no such thing as a horn of a rabbit. So they're thinking that are there no rabbits that have horns? Okay. One of my students sent me a picture of a rabbit with a horn.
Spoiled it.
You have to understand what they mean by not here. It is not here to be experienced, period. So in between is everything except everything within duality. The entirety of our experience, any objectifiable experience, is not tucham, because here we are experiencing it. And it's not Brahman, it's not satyam, because it's subject to change. It's coming into being and going out of being. But if something comes into being and going out of being, you can't say it has a little being in the middle. It has no being on this side, it has no being on this side, but then in the middle it has being. But nothing can come from nothing. And so we have this category called sad asad bhyam anirvachaniya. That's category, means the category of that which cannot be categorized as sat or asat. You have nothing to say about it in terms of its reality other than it's mithya, that it is mithya. And mithya means, in terms of what do we mean by mithya, besides that you can't categorize it as sat or asat, what we mean by mithya is that it is that which depends totally for its being on an adhishtana. And the adhishtana, what an adhishtana is the very basis, the actuality of what is actually there. Mithya depends upon something for its being. You know, what is actually there, it depends on that adhishtana for its being. It has no being of its own. That's the definition of mithya. The word adhishtana is a word we use in reference to mithya. So we say Brahman, the self, the conscious being that you are, is the adhishtana of all of this. The Atma, your being, which is not objectifiable, which is not an object within time and space, that your being is the adhishtana for the whole creation. And that's the whole vision of the Upanishads. So this whole creation is relegated to mithya. And then you say, well, is this mitya creation? You know, is it separate from the self? Is it not separate from the self? No, it's not separate from the self, and it's not separate, not non-separate from the self, because the only thing here is the self. So these categories don't apply. Then you say, well, then what about the relative reality that we experience here? Well, from the standpoint of this relative reality that we're experiencing, this vyavahara, we can say this thing is separate from this thing, but you're talking about something which is not here. And so that that negates the reality of all of this. They're just names within names within names. There's no substance to differentiate one thing from another. And that being so, he goes, not here, but in the commentary, because this duality itself is all of it is mitya, and is not different from the self, it's not separate from the self, and not non-separate from the self, it's just not here at all. The Atma, the Advaya Atma, is Shiva, is most auspicious, because nothing can touch it, nothing can harm it, nothing can compete with it or hurt it in any way. And so it's the self that is Shiva, is absolutely auspicious, because there is no second thing. And so the tattva vids are free. There's because abhayam. What abhayam means no fear. There can't be fear when there's not a second thing. And so the Atma, the self, Brahman, is the most auspicious because there's no second thing. So he talks like that. Let's just look at this next verse, and then we'll do more of it next week. So we're moving. He's talking now about the he's praising this particular darshana, samyak darshana. He goes, vitaraga bhayak krodhaihi, vitaraga bhayak krodhaihi, munibhir veda paragaihi, munibhir veda paragaihi, munibhir veda paragaihi, nirvikalpo hyayam drishtaha, nirvikalpo hyayam drishtaha, prapancho pashamo dvayaha, prapancho pashamo dvayaha, vitaraga payat krodhaihi, vitaraga payat krodhaihi, munibhir veda paragaihi, munibhir veda paragaihi, nirvikalpo hyayam drishtaha, nirvikalpo hyayam drishtaha, prapancho pashamo dvayaha, prapancho pashamo dvayaha. He says, vitaraga bhayakrodaihi, by those for whom kroda, anger, bhaya, fear, raga, desire, so raga, bhaya, krodha, vita is gone. By those people for whom this raga, bhaya, and krodha, this desire, the raga, dvesha, your likes and dislikes, your bhaya, fear, krodha, anger, by those for whom these are gone, the muni bihis, by these munis, munis are the ones who do this mananashila. Mananashila means they have gained clarity. They have done the viveka. They have gained that viveka. Why? Veda paragaihi. So here you've got three different compounds here, the three words that are in the instrumental plural. By the Veda paragaihis, by those people for whom the Vedas are, the study of the Vedas, the study of the Vedanta, the Upanishads, that is their drishti, that is what they do. That is what is most important. And mumukshus, jnanis. The vision of the Vedas, the knowledge that the Vedas have to give, that is their focus. That is where their heart is. That is where their commitment is. So Veda Paragaihi, for those for whom the Vedas is where their commitment lies, study of the Upanishads, by those munis, Those who have that viveka that is born of that knowledge, who have done that analysis, who have seen clearly, so Muni Bihi, Veda Padagaihi, and those, these all build on each other. So those who have that Mumukshutvam, Jignasa, that desire to know, they have that desire to gain this knowledge, they have that Jignasa from the Vedas. So Veda Pada means their commitment is there. They want that knowledge, that they have that Mumukshutvam, or they've gained that knowledge. So Veda Padagaihi, they are Munis, those people who have the Viveka, the discrimination. The Viveka is there. The Viveka is born of knowledge. You can't have Viveka without knowledge. So for those people, those Vivekis, for whom, and here's the result of it, for those people, all their Raga Dvesha, all Mithya, it's gone. Baya, fear, gone. Any fear is just Mithya. Krodha, their anger, gone. Why? Because the problem is solved. The problem is solved because the source of what everybody seeks in life is just ananda, to become whole, to become complete. And then you recognize that what you've spent your lifetime seeking is really your own inviolate nature, is the nature that is Brahman. So Vita Raga Baya Krodhaihi Muni Bihi Veda Padagaihi Nirvikalpahahi Ayam Drishtaha. This Atma, this Ayam Atma, Drishtaha, is clearly seen as Nirvikalpa. Means non-dual. This Atma, the self that I am, is Nirvikalpa. This is Drishtaha. This is clearly recognized. Prapancho Pashamaha Advayaha. This Advaya Atma that I am, for whom the whole creation is Upashama. Means the whole creation has become Mithya. Creation doesn't have to go away to become non-dual. This is another thing we have to understand. People think that for the prapancha upashamaha, for the creation to be totally resolved into the Advaya Atma, to the non-dual self that I am, it has to disappear. It doesn't have to disappear. You just have to see it, what it is. It's one non-dual Atma. What is actually here is my being. If I look at, like if I like the clay, if I look at a clay fresco, you know, that bas relief, I can see, as I'm seeing the very intricate carving, I can see it's just clay. Very clearly. There's no problem. I see both. I see this whole duality as one non-dual Atma. Because what is actually here, the clay, right, is not covered. The clay, the sat chit, is not covered by the nama-rupa. That's the thing. Conscious being, which is me, is not covered by the nama-rupa. It can't be by the name and form, because the name and form is me. Right? Like as I say, the pot, the clay is the pot is the clay. The clay is free of the pot, but the pot is the clay. The pot cannot cover the clay. And all of these nama-rupas cannot cover me. Once the viveka, that's why this muni-bihi, once this viveka is there. Viveka means knowledge. The knowledge is gained from the Vedas, from the Upanishads. So once this knowledge is there, the person is a muni, then with that knowledge, as one has that knowledge, all of this raga, dvesha, these likes and dislikes, they become mitya. It's not that the likes and dislikes all go away, because then you wouldn't... Everything would just go flat. It isn't like that. You know? Like all of a sudden, you not have any experiences in the world. That's not what it is at all. But it's mitya. It doesn't have any bite. I can like something, and if I don't get my way, that's fine also. I can not like something, and it's there, I deal with it. It's not doing anything to my being. The inviolate nature of my being is what we call aparoksha. The inviolate nature of your being is something that just is. You simply are. Nothing's touching that fact at all in any way. These positive experiences and negative experiences, even in fact, baya, baya means fear. If there's some fear, it's mitya. The fear is not happening to your being. And that being is Aparoksha. It's a really important word, this aparoksha. Aparoksha means that you are self-shining, that you're not lit up by a pramana, by a means of knowledge. Everything in the world is lit up by a means of knowledge. I get to see that painting because I have eyes. I have a pramana that allows me to see it. I can see the thoughts in my mind because my mind is there functioning. Right? I need the mind in order to see, to experience the thoughts. I need the mind in order to experience the emotions. But I don't need anything to experience the self. It is aparoksha. It's its own self-experience. It's not being given to me or illumined by anything else. So if the whole universe disappears, nothing happens to me. I don't require the universe to or my sense organs to light me up or know me in any way. So, and I'm not objectifiable as an object. I'm not existing within duality as an object, like a chair. I'm not a chair. So nothing touches me. This mithya is a different order of reality. Basically, it does not touch me. But I don't know that the mind itself that has the problem of bondage and liberation, right, is itself mithya. The mind itself that says, the satyam here is the me, the non-dual Atma. Atma isn't saying, I'm non-dual, don't worry about it. Atma doesn't say anything. The self doesn't say anything. The mind, the mithya mind, has to gain mithya knowledge. The object of knowledge is real. Right? The self is real. But the mind is mithya. The mind has to recognize its own satyam. You get it? It has to recognize its own satyam. That satyam is not dependent on the mithya mind, but the mithya mind is the one that is really suffering. Because it takes itself to be real. The reality, and it knows that it changes and dies and changes and becomes happy and becomes sad and becomes depressed and is living in occupying a body that is mortal. And so it's totally freaked out. Why shouldn't it be? Why shouldn't it be? There's nothing but bhayam. Everything is threatening because everything is time bound and subject to change and subject to death. And that's the condition of the mind. The mind has to realize that it is mithya. But to realize that, for the mind to realize itself as mithya, it has to recognize the satyam. You can't recognize, like for I, to recognize the snake is mithya, I have to see the rope. Otherwise it's just a belief. Somebody says, see that snake is mithya. Well, I'm seeing the snake. I have to see the rope for the snake for mithya to mean anything. The word mithya has no being, no reality until you recognize the satyam. And the whole thing in this teaching is to recognize the satyam so that the universe can be mithya. The universe can't be mithya without the viveka, without discriminating, discerning what is actually here. Otherwise it's just words. You know, so Gaudapada is talking about these words. Okay. Well, there's more to do on this verse, and the next one we'll do it next week. Okay. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnamidam. पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते. ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः. हरिः ॐ.
Struggling a little bit with not separate.
If you say it's separate, then there's the Atma and the universe.
Right.
So that's separate. But if you say it's not separate, apratak, then you can't say that either, because then if you say it's not separate, then this universe exists in the Atma.
Hmm.
Then the Atma has the qualities of the universe.
Mm-hmm. Changes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay, right?
So you have to say it's not separate either.
Oh.
It's not separate, but it's not separate. That's mitya.
Hmm.
Right? So there's no place, there's no way to categorize it.
And so when we talk about Advaita, we're just talking about Brahman. Like, that's the nature of Brahman. It doesn't really, like, get to include the creation.
Well, no, because when you say Advaita, non-dual, if you say Brahman is non-dual,
yeah.
Okay, one without a second, and Brahman is Satchitananda, means that it's the nature of Brahman is being, which is consciousness, which is infinite. That's the Ananta, Satyam Jnanam Anantam, okay? Now, if you say it's infinite, there is not room for a second thing. So then what do you do with this creation? Because we experience this creation. You can't have Brahman, which is infinite, right, and something else. So then what are you going to do with this? Because here it is. You can't say this is... Brahman can't have be this and something else, because that's dual. We have Brahman and the creation. That's true. And then even I could, following that logic, I also can't say, if Brahman is Advaita, non-dual, I can't say there's Brahman and this creation, that's true. I also can't say that Brahman has this creation, you know, as part of it, because that's dual. There's three types, in broad strokes, there's three types of duality. One is called... Swagata Vigata and Sajatiya Veda, Svajatiya Veda. You could say the three types of duality are this. If you have species, there's a duality between species or between sets, I like to say. There's a duality between sets or species, like rocks. You know, rocks are different from trees. Oak trees are different from pine trees. So we can divide the world up into sets. That's one type of dvaita. Another type of duality would be within a given set, there are many members. Say if you take cats, the set of cats, cats have many members, you know. So that's a duality. Then you can take any given member, and any given member of a set, and that member has many parts. That's a duality. And so for to say something is non-dual, first of all, it can't have more than one set. It has to be only one set. But that one set can only have one member. Because if the one set has two members, that's dual. Right? So now you have one set that has one member. But what if you have that one set that has one member, but that member has many parts? That's dual. So for something to be non-dual, there has to be one set that has one member that has no parts. That's Advaita. So now, say if you have Brahman as the one set, right? Then that Brahman, what if you put the creation into Brahman? Then that one Brahman has many parts. You see what I mean? If you take Brahman as one, as different from the creation, then you have the Brahman set and the creation set. That's Advaita. Most people, when they think of Advaita or non-dual, they'll say, well, there's only one creation. Not two. There's only one universe,
mm-hmm.
Not two.
No
And that's what they mean by non-dual. That's not what we mean by non-dual. Non-dual means one without a second, that there is only Brahman here. Then you have to count for the creation. If you say that the creation is separate, dvaita. If you say that it's internally, dvaita, because then the one member has many parts. Or the creation is a second set. And the one set, Brahman, has no parts, it has no member, it has one member and no parts, but there's a second set. You see what I mean? And that second set, the creation, makes for two, and that creation happens to have many members and many parts. Do you get it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now, so you can't say, if you say that by Brahman as being non-dual, we're only just talking about Brahman. Do you get it? If we're saying, we're talking about all that is, that there is no such thing as duality. There's only one non-dual Brahman. That includes the entire creation. That means the creation has from its, in terms of its essential nature, is only Brahman. And even though you experience all of these parts from the standpoint of the creation, you can't say something that is really only Brahman. Each one of these parts is only Brahman. There's nothing really here except for Brahman to differentiate these parts. Mm-hmm. You get it? And then the other thing was, well, you know, so that being the case in reference to it not being separate from Brahman and from its own self, if there's only Brahman there, you can't say that those parts are real. Then what are you going to, then you have to look at this whole thing. Well, what are you going to say about this creation? What are you going to do with it? Where are you going to put it? You know, you can't say that it's separate. Here it is. You can't say it's separate from Brahman. And you can't say it's not separate from Brahman. And that's what we mean by mithya. There's nothing here but Brahman. It's advaya. It's non-dual. It's non-dual Brahman.
And you were using the word to describe mithya.
Mithya.
That it's
so to
in
said,
between.
It yeah.
is uncountable.
You can't, I said, sad asad bhyam anirvachaniya. Anirvachaniya means it can't be described or defined or categorized as sat, that which is paramarthika satyam, or that which is asat, non-existent, tucham. So if we look at the orders, the possible orders of reality, in terms of the totality of experience, we can say, well, there is the Brahman, which is the Paramarthika Satyam. It is not subject to negation in past, present, or future. It is. It is being itself. There is Tucham, the things that we can imagine are not there. They're not there. We cannot have an experience of them. Those things are Tucham. They don't exist. So we have Satyam, Tucham, and in the middle, these things that are Mithya, means you can't categorize them as satyam or as tucham. They're here in the middle. They're mithya. They depend for they're here to be experienced, but they depend totally, 100% on satyam for their being.
How do you strengthen that position in your mind?
You don't, well, that's what all the whole of Vedanta is satyam mithya. That's what it is that recognition of satyam mithya, because there's no advaita without that. And so that's all the prakriyas, all the teaching methodologies are about in the end satyam mithya. So everything is going to take you to that position, and that's what strengthens it, just seeing it from all these different ways.
I'm wondering if you could kind of zoom in on the last step. There's that analysis, there's names with the names with the names, and it ends up that you end up at Brahman. And that last little step, I can sort of imagine you can break the lamp down, there's the bulb, there's the shade, there's the base, there's the pole, there's that.
The thing is that it's that pursuit of names within names within names is infinite. There can't come to an end. As long as long as something takes up space, as long as an object takes up space, it can be further divided, right? And we say it's really only a name because there's no real thing there. But if you think about it in terms of form, like say you start with the lamp, dividing the lamp up into its component parts, and then take one part and divide that part up into its component parts, you'll never reach the end because as long as the part, component part, takes up space, it's got a top and a bottom and a right and a left. You can divide it, right? And so that's not going, that division is not going to stop. It can't stop until it no longer takes up space. But when it no longer takes up space, it's not there. So, but what is there all the way through this process of division, if we're working with rupa, with working with form, what is there all the way through this process of endless division and dividing is being. That no matter what the form is, that form is. Now we divide it, now the two forms are. The forms, that what was there before in terms of the form is gone, but what is left, as you make these infinite divisions, is whatever you've done, it is. You can never escape the being, the isness. And so at the end you can say, you know, really, these are just names for being. Because being is what is there continually. It's never negated at all. And so say I have, you know, a being in the form, the being, the lamp being. And then the lamp being is divided up into a lot of little beings, like the pole being and the base being. Being is what is not changing. Being is what is actually there. The names.
But there is a difference between pole being and base being and bulb being. And
well, see, the thing is that there's a difference, but as you change the form, right, what was there before doesn't exist anymore. If you change the form. Right, it doesn't exist anymore.
Being is the constant.
Being is the constant. Being never goes away. So think, if you use the illustration of, say, you have a lump of clay and you make it that lump into a pot, and then you make it into a plate. Right, you can divide it up into a lot of little lumps or whatever. What never changes is the clay. Right, but the forms have no being. The forms are all mitya. Any form is mitya because it's depending upon what is its substance. Just by nature, any form depends upon something else for its being. And so in the end, what is it really that the whole universe is depending upon? Because the universe is infinitely divisible. You know, and so what we consider everything is really just a conglomerate of smaller parts. And then those smaller parts are conglomerates of smaller parts. And so in the end, what is here? You can't say nothing, because if you say nothing is here, then nothing is going to be here all the way up the chain. And if it's here all the way up the chain is nothing, then we're just left with nothing. And there is no mitya, there is no being, there's no experience, there's just non-existence. So when we say non-existence, we're not talking about shunyata. We're talking about non-existence. With non-existence, if it is, what is non-existent isn't here. It's like the son of a barren woman. It just isn't here to be that upon which something is built. And that's never, we never have an experience of non-existence. But every experience we have, so that even the experience of non-existence is kalpita. It's imagination. You can never get there because there is no experience on any level, subtle or gross, that is away from being, and being is the constant. And being is not an object, it's aparoksha, it's self-evident. And we freely give it to everything. And so that's why we say, really, all of this diversity, this non-atvam, all of this diversity, all of this is really only names within names. They're only names for being. Because in the end, it is being that is here. You see? So you start with some big conglomerate, like a lamp or whatever you want to use, you know, and that is, and take it into those parts, those parts are, take them into smaller parts, those parts are, take them into atoms, those atoms are, take them into quarks.
Have scientists ever, when they break it down to subatoms and keep breaking it, did they ever come up with any conclusions themselves, or are they just seeing that there's...
I think they go into smaller and smaller parts and trying to discover relationships, you know, that account for the experiences that we're having. But when you get to the self, it's not about relationship and it's not an object in the creation. It's the very non-dual substance of every level of experience. It's the non-dual me of the seer, the being of the seer, the being of the seen, and the being of the seen. Right? So it's the very self of the subject and the object. So the self of the seer here, the self of this mind, is the self of the seen. Right? In terms of knownness. And we can understand that, like, in terms of our relation, of our experience of the world, we can, with a viveka, we can differentiate the actual knownness of the world from the nama-rupa, where you say, okay, this, everything in this room is known. The wall, the painting is known. For example, I go like this, the painting is known, this intervening space is known with all the people in it, right? This body is known, these clothes are known to me, that's known. My sense organs are known, and I'm aware of them, they're known, right? My thoughts are known, my emotions are known, the I thought is known, my memories are known, my relationships are known, I am known. There's nothing that's not known. But knownness is just another word for consciousness. There is nothing from the self outward, if you can talk about outward, from the me, the conscious me, all the way outward to whatever, you know, my mind can include with my sense perception, all of it is known. And that knownness is the aparoksha, self-evident, conscious being. So now I have to just differentiate this, the self-evident me that is really the being of all experience, not just the experience of this body, mind, sense organs, but the being of every experience that there is. All of these experiences that I label as, you know, rug and chair and person and plant, etc., those are just names for Brahman, names for being.
Can you use the word shunyata?
Shunyata.
I believe shunya means zero.
I was doing that for Hal because he knows what it means.
Yeah, I know. Well, usually that's a Buddhist.
Yeah, it doesn't mean zero. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean zero. It means empty.
Empty.
Now, when we use empty, I can do a whole teach forever using empty. You know,
yeah.
Shunyata. But shunyata, that, I think this is a big mistake that some people make in Buddhism, where they equate shunyata with non-existence. Then everything changes if you do that. And that's not what it is.
What is it?
It's shunyata, it's empty. I can say Brahman is empty of all nama-rupa from its own standpoint. I can say the mitya, they don't do it like this, but I can do it like this. The whole mitya is shunyata. It's empty of any essential being. It's mitya.
Oh, okay.
Brahman is shunyata. It's empty of any diversity whatsoever. It's non-dual. This mitya is empty of any essence, essential nature. It's mitya. They don't say the mitya. But when you can unfold it in that way, and it all works, makes sense, then you read what the Buddhists themselves, the people who are mahatmas within Buddhist tradition, and you read what they're saying about it in great poetry. It talk, but they're all talking about Brahman. What Vedanta would be saying is Brahman.
So
they're not talking about non-existence. I can make this whole creation non-existent. I can say everything here that I experience is infinitely divisible. We have a prakriya. Everything here is infinitely divisible. There's no thing here. You know, everything here comes into being and goes out of being.
So yeah, when Gaudapada says here that it's, you can't say it's separate nor that it's not separate, that's very much like the Shunyata type teachings of
Nagarjuna. Really, yeah.
That's why the Buddhists hesitate to even say one or oneness, because people take it then that you're taking two.
Yeah, one not. They'll take it like one not two, or something like that.
Yeah, they say not two.
Yeah, so we say one without a second.
Right.
Yeah, because of that very problem.
For the same
we
reason,
say one right. means, you know, it's one, but one is only one, a two, three, four, five, six. So you have to say right. one without a second,
without
and that's,
a second.
And when you say a dvaita, dvaita means two, a means not two, non-dual. It's not two. So that, yeah. Because of that very problem. Yeah.
Carol, you're talking in answer to my question about how everything has being.
Yeah.
And then a little later on. You're
but the being is satyam and the not and everything else is mithya because
right.
everything else is enjoying being while it's here, but it goes out of being.
And then later you were talking about the everything has knownness also.
Yeah,
so
because.
Sat and chit. And so my question is. The Ananda, how does the Ananda fit in that?
See, Ananda, it means limitless, really. The Sat-Chit has no limitation whatsoever. It's non-dual. So the Ananda from the standpoint of the mind, we say, is, you can use the word bliss, but from the standpoint of the self, it's infinite. Sat-Chit Ananda, Sat-Chit Ananda, Satyam Jnanam Anantam. Anantam means limitless.
How does that relate to, it's sometimes called fullness? What, I guess I'm confused what it really is.
Well,
is fullness an experience?
See, there's a big problem with the word ananda, and the problem with the word, there's not much problem with ananta because people don't really know what it means. but with ananda, there is a problem because it's been translated as bliss. And so now, when we use ananda, your mind is thinking bliss, you know, instead of the limitless, or as a word, which is pointing to your nature, the limitlessness of your being. Because it's hard to understand what. The only way to really understand what they mean by ananda is to differentiate your being from all of these different experiences that come and go. Because otherwise what happens is you're looking for a bliss experience in the mind, not the fullness or wholeness or the very swarupa, the very nature, limitless nature of the me. If you think me, the me, what makes me, this person here, you know, and think this me is totally unencumbered. It is limitless. The limitlessness of this me is what we mean by ananda, the changeless, limitless nature. And so instead of to try to get rid of the bliss, which is a way ananda is being translated, we say fullness or wholeness or limitless being, or we use all of these words, but in the end, the only thing that's going to tell you what that word is the recognition of your own nature. Just like recognition, what do we mean by existence? You know, you have to recognize your being stripped of the mithya. You have to recognize me stripped of, you know, all of these things that I am because this body is. I have to recognize being in and of itself. Consciousness in and of itself, not consciousness of something. but just the self-evident nature of me. So all of these words that we use, all of the teachings that we use, are used as prakriyas, as a teaching methodology to keep pointing your mind, getting your mind to differentiate your own presence, your own being, from itself. The me that can't be objectified. So sometimes we'll do a guided meditation, or I'll say something like, as I make you focus a little just on your own being, what are you like? What is your own being like? How would you describe it? Asking your mind to do that. Why is your being called ananda, or wholeness, or full, or complete? Why? What is it about you that makes these words, you know, what are these words pointing at? Because what happens is the words, all of our words really exist within duality. They're meant to define dual experiences we're aware of, not the nature of the self.
Okay. It's a pointer.
It's a pointer. That's right. It's a pointer. It's a pointer.
And it
has to be, what it's pointing at has to be differentiated from mental experiences.
Well, that's always hard, because you keep thinking it's a state of mind or some kind of state, too.
Well, I know, but that's why we teach until we're absolutely blue in the face. This is the hard thing, you know. I think because in the world we all want a happy experience.
Yeah.
And so then we are conditioned to think that then when we gain self-knowledge, that will be the happiest experience.
Yeah, it's natural.
You know, enlightenment. And so it's always related to an experience in the mind, rather than the self that is there in every experience.
Yeah.
Changelessly present in every experience. And so we have to get the mind to look at what is already present and changeless amidst whatever other things you're experiencing. You are already aparoksha. You are already completely present. And so we have to recognize, okay, if that's so, why do they say being, sat, chit, ananda? What are these words referring to? What is really the subject of those words?
Those words are an attempt to describe what your nature is like, right?
Yeah, it's pointing at you. Yeah.
Is ananda ever translated as peace?
I've never seen it translated, because we usually have shanti for that.
Okay.
But we use the word peace, like if I say shantoham, you are peace, you are silence, you are asanga. Asangoham, shantoham, all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All of these words are pointing.
What is asanga?
Asanga means not attached to anything. Mm-hmm. Means every experience that you have is coming and going in you, but it's not touching you.
Mm-hmm.
So we use these words as pointers. But ananda is a hard one, because we're so conditioned. It goes, you know, it feeds right into our conditioning.
Well, on the
enlightenment
side,
means I am totally blissed out for the highest, a bliss that is beyond my imagination. But, you know, the thing is that that is actually true. But it's in terms of a recognition of your own nature that is here right now. And so we wouldn't talk about it in that way. I'm not saying I'm not blissed out, but there is nothing more dear to me than the self, than myself.
Or okay. Even if you're blissed out, you could be more blissed out. I mean, that's a
endless, yeah, so it's endless.
Super bliss.
Super
but
bliss.
Say if you say the recognition that instead of bliss, it blisses us, it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say there is nothing more dear to me than the self, then that's the self, your being is so precious. You know, there's nothing more loved than that. And so it is the most precious, the most everything. There's nothing more important than that. There's nothing more dear than that. We don't think about it, but it's a fact.
In Buddhism, they have a concept of ego cherishing, which is supposed to be a bad thing, talking about Buddhism.
What is it called?
Ego cherishing.
Ego cherishing? Yeah, okay.
Self-cherishing,
yeah. Right. But then, when you say self-cherishing...
But you're talking about the small ego and about trying to, on an everyday basis, to kind of take care of yourself and put yourself first and your convenience and...
Yeah, and this is very different than that.
I know it's very different. It's just dangerously close. In language.
Language is hard. Language, and no matter what you're teaching, whatever you're teaching, the language has to be very clearly unfolded.
Agreed.
Yeah. That's all part of the teaching also.
For like a year and a half, I thought you were saying the son of a bear and a woman.
Oh!
I'm just figuring it out. Which works too, because
yeah.
That's also non-existent,
yeah.
So
yeah.
I didn't never cut
that. That is great.
Yeah.
You had one like that
yeah,
too.
Did,
like, what was yours? That was really funny.
The counter of experience.
Yeah, the counter. counter. Yeah.
At first, I was thinking like an.
You thought it was a tabletop.
First, I thought like an abacus, like it counts. I'm like, how does that work? And then it was like, oh, an accountant. They keep track of things. And that didn't work either.
So funny. And then the teacher can't always think of these things. Remember when I think I've told you I was teaching in Sweden, and in Sweden, their English is so good, they barely have an accent or anything, but still they don't have some of the people don't have quite the same vocabulary and whatnot. So I was using my meadow example. You know, imagine a meadow and all that, which I used all through the whole course, and at the end one student said, "What's a meadow?" What is a meadow? I thought, oh no. Oh no. Yeah.
All these days I've been using this image.
Yeah.
No, it didn't fly.
I wonder what she was imagining.
Yeah, I have no idea. And I don't know who it was either because they put their questions on paper and I just... But this happens all the time, you know. That's why this language thing, you're not always aware of it. That's why satsang is so important. Because then the teacher starts to realize, oh, this didn't work the way you're saying that. It's going to be taken this way and that way. Yeah.
So you then use a different method.
Try. Most creative person I know is Swamiji. And work so creatively at figuring out different ways to say it. He finds these words aren't really working quite right. You know, make adjustments. You know, keeps it fresh. So. Okay.